This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
I was like some ordinary woman on the streets of New York who was like wearing interesting clothes. And so that's really how it started. And it was really a pleasure project. It was a creative impulse. It was an act of self-care. And I had no intention for it to become what it eventually became.
Welcome to A Certain Age, a show for women who are unafraid to age out loud. I'm your host, Katie Fogarty. Beauties, I have a love-hate relationship with social media. I'm sure you do too. I'm going to spare you all the reasons I think social media is corrosive, divisive, distracting, and focus on what I absolutely love about the medium. At its best, social media is a creative, gatekeeper-free channel for discovery, self-expression, connection. I follow crazy talented pie makers, gardeners, any number of British interior designers. My feed looks like I moonlight as a set designer for the last season of The Crown. I also follow incredible women who run age-positive accounts that make me feel seen and supported as I age, that make me excited about the possibility, creativity, vibrancy that exists in our later years. My guest today is one of the best reasons to be on Instagram. I'm joined by Lynn Slater, an author and former professor known as the accidental icon. You may know her from her arresting eyewear ad for Valentino. You may have seen her on billboards around the world. You may have read her thoughtful blog, seen her in the front row of a fashion show or in Vogue, or you may be eagerly anticipating her riveting memoir, How to Be Old. Get ready to take notes. On today's show, we are diving into lessons on living boldly and exploring how to experiment, reinvent, and of course, how to be old. Welcome, Lynn.
Thanks. That's a great intro.
Well, I am really thrilled. Frequent listeners of the show have heard me say before that one of the best parts of having a podcast is connecting with incredible women. And I absolutely loved your memoir, How to Be Old. It spans a 10-year time period from when you first launched your blog back in 2014 at the age of 61 to your explosion, right? As a cultural force known as the accidental icon. You go through the highs and lows and evolution and eventual distancing that you undergo from the world of influencing. We're going to explore as much as we can, but I would love to have you start by setting the stage. The first chapter of your book is called Predict the Future by Inventing It. You invented the accidental icon. How did you first come to be known by this persona?
Well, in 2014, I was working full-time as a professor of social work. And being a social worker for 47 years, I had to learn how to deal with some of the really challenging content and experiences. And I had a lifelong habit of going out of my professional life and into a world where I began to explore some creative expression that was completely different from what I was doing in my daily life. And so at 60, I really started the process. I started to take classes at FIT, a fashion school, because I just had this interest in clothes, not really fashion so much, but clothing and the power that it held to be able to express identity, to experiment with identity, to sort of transgress. And so I took classes in a whole variety of things, jewelry fabrication, sewing, and I took this class called Building a Vintage Business. And all of the students and the professors, whenever I traveled through the school, they would say, wow, you have really great style. You should start a blog. And so I was like, okay, that's easy. I know how to make a website. I know how to write. I like to research. The one thing that I had to start doing was having my partner take photos of me in some of my clothes. But that ended up being fun because my partner was a street photographer. And so the images that were in the very, very earliest years of my blog were just kind of like gritty street scenes. I was like some ordinary woman on the streets of New York who was like wearing interesting clothes. And so that's really how it started. And it was really a pleasure project. It was a creative impulse. It was an act of self-care. And I had no intention for it to become what it eventually became.
You know, it's so interesting because I loved that initial chapter of the book where you're talking about this building a vintage business class. You say in that chapter, quote, that you enjoyed it because it treasured oldness,
yeah,
which was something that you connected to. And so you were sharing street style photography, your incredible style, your incredible, you know, fashion sense. But there was an explosion of interest in you that went beyond simply the clothes, and in that your age played some kind of role in that. How did you see that link?
What was really interesting is that for me, this project had nothing to do with my age. And that's actually how I generated the hashtag age is not a variable. I was a woman who happened to be a certain age, but I was just expressing myself in a creative way. And I didn't do it. I did not have the intention to say, oh, look at me, I'm finding a new way to be old. Actually, society and the media made it about my age.
Yeah, that's so interesting. Because you also say, by the way, my copy of your book right now looks like a porcupine because it's studded with all of these post-it notes of things that I flagged. This book was so enjoyable. But you say in one of these chapters, quote, I am calmly demanding my right to self-creation on my own terms. I couldn't care less if you like me or not, want me or not. I appear unafraid of being old. This is a breath of fresh air for those of all ages seeking the freedom to self-create in a world defined by standards of youth and beauty. And I think we're in such an interesting moment of time because we're really in the rise of the anti-aging movement, right? Mm-hmm. But yet it still feels transgressive to reject societal beauty norms, right? And part of the reason why the media focused in on you, it just felt outrageous and disruptive to be somebody who was self-creating, expressing herself in a society that says, oh, after a certain age, you are invisible or we don't pay attention. Why do you see that? What's your take? I have a lot of thoughts, but you're here as the guest. I want to hear your thoughts.
I think it's very interesting because for me, my experience with how society thought about age really changed over time. And in looking back, I think when I first started in those early years before I became very well known is when I was really being transgressive. Because at that point, there were no older women who appeared in fashion. And I think Joan Didion in a Celine ad and me in a Valentino eyewear ad were sort of the first older women who were featured in fashion magazines in an advertisement from a very big brand.
Yeah, it's so fascinating.
And I think initially it was, you know, look at the narrative told about me was, oh, look at this interesting woman. She's a professor of social work. And at the age of 61, she decided to reinvent herself. And that was the story that I could live with. Over time, that story changed. And I became promoted in the media as somebody who was living an exemplar of how every woman should be living an older life. And there was no mention of the privilege that I had in being able to sort of be the accidental icon, and that this was not an image of age that is available to everyone.
Let's pick that up after the break. I think that was one of the really most fascinating parts of the book that you raised. We're heading into a quick break. We'll be right back.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. If you had an extra hour in your day, would you use it to head to yoga, take a nap, read a book, hang with a friend, maybe start a podcast? A lot of us spend our lives wishing we had more time. I know I do. I have 3 kids, 2 jobs, 1 puppy, and to be honest, a zillion things on my want to get to list. Here's what I've learned. The best way to squeeze something special into your schedule is to know what's important to you and make it a priority. Therapy can help you find what matters to you so you can do more of it. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, so it's convenient, flexible, and suited to your busy schedule. Getting started is so easy. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Learn to make time for what makes you happy with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/acertainage today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/acertainage.
I'm Erica, one third of the podcast Books and Betches, a comedy book podcast where we swear, spoil, and we talk about...
Whoa, you cannot say that in this.
What do you mean? That's like our slogan. It's our gimmick.
It is, but just say we're a very funny adult book podcast.
How about we just give some examples of things we talk about?
Well, there's a lot of chaos.
I'm Chris, in it with me I have.
Wobbler!
No.
We talk about books, but we're not your AP Lit class.
I definitely hit on the major points.
You absolutely did not.
She did.
You talked
just
about...
Just not in the order you thought she would.
You talked so slowly about one thing.
A lot of sidebar conversations.
Are you denying the existence of chupacabras?
You know what, Erica? Yes, I am.
And we don't always get the facts right.
Epilogues don't belong in books. Call it chapter one.
That's a
the
prologue.
The second I see...
That's a prologue.
Oh, I'm talking about prologues.
You can listen to new episodes of the Books and Betches podcast every Tuesday morning, anywhere you get your podcasts.
Bye-bye.
Lynn, we're back from the break. When we headed into it, you talked about the fact that you were held up as this exemplar of aging, of self-creation, and sort of modeled as a measuring stick. In our culture, women are held to impossible standards, impossible measuring sticks regularly. Mm-hmm. And you share in the book that you started to bristle against this measuring stick, and you had this sort of epiphany about how you were unwittingly falling into this trap of being that stick. Can you sort of expand upon that?
Yeah. And I think over time, what began to happen, and I think initially from a good impulse, is that we started to really push this idea of sort of active, idealized aging, because there had been such pervasive and profound ageism and negative representations. And so I think what has happened now is that, like a lot of these other movements, we've gone a bit too far. And so I think what happens now is that we have these two polarized views of aging. On one hand, we have the decline narrative, where you are full of needs, medical, mental health, caregiving, and that you are a huge burden on society, robbing the prosperity of younger generations. But then on the other hand now, you have this very idealized, ageless, super fit, looking young, highly resourced, you can do anything you want person and representation of age. And the truth is that for most of us, and I'm putting myself there, that the truth of getting older is in between those two polarizations. And that both polarizations exist in opposition to each other.
It's so interesting. I've had the same experience, you know, myself a little bit, like launching this podcast. You know, it's for women who are unafraid to age out loud. I wear an Age Out Loud sweater on the podcast cover art. I stand for sort of being age positive, embracing this time. And I heard from listeners over the 3 years I've been doing this show that I've unwittingly made some people feel bad, because I've had people reach out to me to say, do you always feel positive about aging? And I know behind that question is a sense of sadness that they don't, or that maybe they're not measuring up. And the answer, of course, is no, I don't. I'm human. I don't always feel great. Like, I'd like to be able to read the fine print. I'm worried about my parents. I'm worried about my own mental health, you know, as I age, and I'm worried about my memory. And, you know, we don't all, things exist in a gray scale area. And I know that you really grapple with that. So what role, if any, did this conversation play in your decision to step back to a degree from the work that you had been doing? And that, because you're very clear in the book, you are Lynn Slater, known as the accidental icon, but accidental icon is sort of a persona that you have adopted or was given to you, and that sometimes that you play or you inhabit, like an article of clothing, one you can put on and take off, right?
Right.
When did you start to take off the accidental icon persona more and hang it up in the closet to revisit periodically when needed?
I think that the year before the pandemic, I was miserable, even though I was traveling all over the world, making more money than I ever made in my entire career as a social worker, far more, which is a little bit of a commentary on what we value. But I was so unhappy. And I started to, interestingly enough, the first book proposal I wrote was about, I was kind of saying, okay, I'm a boomer, but I have millennial burnout, the way that Anne Helen Peterson wrote about it. And it really did tell the truth of how I was feeling at that time. And I started to read a lot of books like The Art of Doing Nothing by Jenny Odell and other authors, younger women who were writing about the impact of social media and sort of living in this hyper-productive, super consumerist kind of way. And so I began to slowly understand what I had gotten myself into and was really starting to change right before the pandemic and going back and remembering what I loved about fashion when I started writing the blog. And then the pandemic hit and that just stopped everything. And when you are addicted, as I was, to living a life online, which, by the way, I think the other thing that really contributed was all the time I did Accidental Icon until 2019, I was still working as a full-time professor of social work and doing social work things. And so I think in 2019, I made a decision to retire and just do Accidental Icon. And as I was writing the memoir, I realized that that really was the beginning of me really losing myself and becoming this digital creature, very disembodied from my real life and my real self. And as long as I was being a professor and a social worker, I was having one foot firmly in real life. And so the pandemic made me stop scrolling, stop rushing. I had time to reflect, and I returned to writing on my blog which I had gotten away from when I became an Instagram creature. And so I started to write more on my blog. I started to be more vulnerable. I started to talk about how I was feeling, my loss, my sadness. And I started even to change what I did on Instagram, which was I started to do a lot more what I call mini blogging, where my captions became longer and were really like little pieces of writing. And I found a lot of women relating to the things I was saying. And as the quarantine was ending, my partner and I decided that we needed to change our life and reconnect to important values. And so we moved outside of the city to be closer to my mother, to my daughter and my grandchildren and my son-in-law, and to really live a sustainable life. And we bought an old 1912 fixer-upper, which we're working on ourselves, everything in it, except for my appliances, is recycled and secondhand. And
you've returned to vintage.
Yes, I've returned to vintage and consignment in everything that I'm wearing and doing and designing.
Yeah, I love that, because sort of this intergenerational inheritance is a through line of your book. You know, you open it by saying that you dedicate the book to your mother, who taught you how fun it is to be a belligerent woman. And then in one of your later chapters, you sort of resurface this notion of belligerence, and you talk about intergenerational belligerence and how you are in a long line of women who are independent and have sort of freedom of self-expression. And I love this notion of intergenerational belligerence. You know, and what do we owe the women and the men? I have two young sons. Like, what do we owe the generation that's coming behind us in chronological years?
Yes. And you know, it's so interesting that you say that, because I've had some interviews recently where by younger women, women in their 30s, and I follow a lot of writers, younger women who are really asking hard questions about their own lives. They're really talking about motherhood in very honest and truthful and sometimes brutal ways. And during the interview, one young woman was asking me questions like, do you think about dying every day? Hmm. And it made me realize that as these younger women are asking harder questions about the life that they're living now, that they're coming up with harder questions for older women. They want us to tell our truth. They are saying, tell us the truth here about what it is like.
So how would you answer that, Lynn? How would you answer that question?
I would say that there are parts of being old that are wonderful, and there are parts that are suck, and that a lot of it has to do with genetics, your social positionality, race, class, gender, sexuality, just all of these societal structures that create your challenges and opportunities. And that within that, right, our work really needs to be, how do we respond to these challenges in ways that are creative and life-giving without denying that they are going to come and that they exist?
Yeah, absolutely. You just outlined for us some of the various factors that shape how we live and move about this planet, our race, our education, you know, the physical body that we inhabit. But also, you know, I talk a lot about culture on this show, because I have a lot of listeners who on paper might have everything that you think you need, a good education. They come from affluent backgrounds. They have whatever you might think the right physical appearance is. And I know that there's sometimes people feel a sense of constraint and that they are limited in some way. And some of it is the messaging that gets pushed upon us. You know, yes, it's easier to make changes when you have the deck stacked in your favor. That's always been the case throughout the course of human history. But sometimes we need to get out of our own way.
Oh.
And I hear that a lot. And we started this conversation just the way you started your book, by talking about this epiphany that you had by taking your Bill DaVinci business class. I mean, you were encouraged to take your style and your innate interest in writing and clothes and create a blog. And in that class, the professor shared a phrase with you, and it was something that I noted down because I thought it was amazing. And I was like, I should embroider that on a pillow if I could embroider, which is there are several routes to the same destination. And it really jumped off the page to me because getting to midlife has firmly taught me that. When I was younger, I was under the misimpression that there was one way, like, or a particular route you had to be on. But as you age, you learn that's not true. Like, you can diverge and loop and double back and switch back and take all these different new avenues. For a listener who's sitting here thinking, I would love to be taking a different route, what one or two pieces of advice might you give them?
Well, I think what I've always done is I put myself into a situation without knowing necessarily or without being attached to a particular outcome that is going to teach me something new or to give me an experience that I never had before. And I think the danger of being super goal-oriented, and again, it's a balance because I really believe that people need to be goal-oriented when they're young about how they want to be old. I think that when it comes to self-creation and expression, that it really is, for me, throughout my entire life, I would put myself outside into an arena I was completely unfamiliar with. So, for example, I've taken classes in improv, and that came back into my life in multiple ways that you're unaware of. So, for example, knowing how to do improv made me a really good clinician, because when you are working with people in that way, you never know what's going to come into the room. And so you have to be very good at thinking on your feet. The same thing as a professor. It enabled me to improvise this sort of alter ego accidental icon. So even at first, if it's not giving you a concrete idea, it will just become part of you if you let it just metabolize and see what it can turn into when you return back to your everyday life.
Yeah, I adore that notion. And I've had the same experience. You don't have to know how a story is going to end to get started. And
yep.
I launched this podcast for fun. And I had no expectation that I'd be doing 170 shows and I would have listeners around the world. That wasn't even on my vision board. And yeah, you can get started and see where things take you. And not everything pans out. I've started other things that never gelled in quite the same way, but it doesn't mean I haven't taken something from them. And by the way, I've done improv too, and it's so fun. So
it is so fun. And I think what you're really talking about also is sort of why being old is sort of like any other time of your life in this way, is that there's some things that you can plan for, but there's always going to be things that you cannot. And if you go back and you revisit every decade of your life, there were always things you planned for and always things you could not, but you ended up figuring out how to deal with them and you moved forward. And so I think that's really the same for aging. right? There's things that you should plan for and can plan for that's in your control. But there's many things that are going to happen just like any other time in life that are just going to come uninvited. And so how you respond and how you think about it and how you feel about it is in your control.
100%. I absolutely love that. Lynn, before we move on to the speed round, because we're nearing the end of our time together, I wanted to ask you about one last aspect of your book. You already mentioned that you moved into, I think you said, a 1912 house. So this is your new old house, and you and your partner are maintaining and renovating and patching and doing what I have to do, because I'm also in an old house, which I love. This is also the period of the time when the book is really in formation and being birthed into the world. I know it's coming out soon. And you say, quote, "Sometime during this past year, I've really accepted I'm old and feel no shame, no despair about it. In fact, I decide to inhabit this new version of me as completely as I do my house in the vintage clothes that hang upstairs in my closet room. I decide to keep saying I'm old over and over until it loses all its pejorative connotations." So what did this idea of sort of actively throwing your arms around the notion of old and old age, you call your book How to Be Old.
Right.
Walk us through what this delivered for you and why you embraced it this way.
Well, I think some of it comes, and there's other groups that have reappropriated sort of language that other people have used about them. And so I think it's kind of my way of reclaiming my narrative that about how to be old that I felt was sort of hijacked from me by the way that society decided to position me. And so it's really reclaiming and embracing and not fearing the fact that I am old and that I want to live, and because I am old, that living every moment of my life in a very rich and meaningful way is even more important to me now. But it really is reclaiming my identity and really saying, this is who I am today.
Thank you. Thank you. I love that. All right. We're at the time of our speed round. This is just sort of 1 to 2 word notes or little thoughts to end on a high energy note. So let's do this. Okay. Writing How to Be Old was
cathartic, painful, exhilarating.
Nice. We barely talked about fashion. Who is a designer that you never get tired of wearing?
Yohji Yamamoto.
What article of clothing makes you feel most like yourself today?
My 1980 Gap vintage overalls.
Nice. Is there an article of clothing that you are saving for your granddaughter?
A beautiful silk kimono that my grandmother gave to me.
Curiosity, trying new things is a theme of the book. What is the last new thing you tried on for size? And I don't mean clothing.
Being on Riverside and doing podcasts.
I love it. I love it. There's always new things to learn.
Yes, exactly.
And there's always new ways to express ourselves. Fashion, you know, clothing is one form. You've written a book, which is another. Is there another medium that you are thinking about exploring next?
Well, I have to say, I have really been enjoying more than anything else. And it's most likely because of the women like you who are running them, but I have really enjoyed the conversations I've been having on podcasts. So I prefer to be a perennial guest instead of running one myself. But I really, you know, having conversations really feels important to me as compared to like throwing up visual images.
I want to share one last quote from your book. And I was smiling when you said conversations because I knew I was going to share this. You say, quote, "Sometimes a conversation can be the greatest adventure of your life. Creating this podcast has been that for me. Thank you for today's conversation and being part of the adventure." Okay, this one is my last question, and I'm sorry that our time is coming to an end. Your one-word answer to complete the sentence, "As I age, I feel..."
Privileged.
Nice. This has been so much fun. Lynn, before I say my final goodbye, where can my listeners keep following you and find your work and writing?
I think I'm going to be living in Substack for the long haul and slowly saying goodbye to social media.
Well, we are going to miss you there, but we will love hanging out with you on Substack. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Katie.
This wraps A Certain Age, a show for women who are aging without apology. And before I say goodbye, a quick update. We are going to add a new show segment to close every show. I'll be answering questions submitted by you, so feel free to send your questions my way. You can DM me on Instagram or email me at katie@acertainagepod.com. Special thanks to Michael Mancini, who composed and produced our theme music. See you next time, and until then, age boldly, beauties.